Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. Happy Monday to you, everyone. Happy New Year. We are back with the Coach Harvey Hyde talking all about this USC football program. Tons of information has been flowing through the USC football channels. Lots of newsy stuff we need to get to. And we have a ton of questions from all of you out there. So we want to do our best to answer those with the Coach Harvey Hyde. Follow him on Twitter at Coach Harvey Hyde or go to his website, HarveyHyde.com. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you guys sent it a lot today. As I said, podcast at USCFootball.com is the email address, or you could call or text us at 424-254-9141. We do prefer, if you've got the Apple Podcasting app on any of your Apple devices, subscribe to the Peristyle Podcast. Leave a five-star rating and any kind of review with comments, feedback, suggestions, all of that. Questions, we can bump you up to the top of the list. But we do love if you can leave us a review. It does help grow the show. And going into 2021 now on the Peristyle Podcast, and we want to keep rolling with all of your questions, all of the information. We're going to do that with the Coach, Harvey Hyde. Coach, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm great, buddy, and I want to say Happy New Year to you and all of our listeners out there. Let's get rid of 2020 and move into an exciting 2021, and it's up to us to make it happen. So let's follow all the guidelines, the rules, and everything so we always are on the same page and we all win, okay? It's difficult to do things when somebody's running one play and someone else is running another play. So why don't we all run the same play and win this big game against this virus?
Yeah. Hopefully we can all do that, and hopefully the vaccine keeps people safe and we keep distributing and all that stuff and we get normal 2021 as normal as possible. So we hope for that. So there's been a lot going on. A couple assistant coaches were let go, fired or not, contracts renewed, a couple big commitments that USC end up one signee and one verbal commitment for the All-American Bowl signing day show. They didn't have a game, obviously, this year. A bunch of guys opted out early for the NFL. Lots of newsy kind of stuff going on. But we got so many questions because we had a little bit of a break over the holidays. And so, Coach, I think it might be best to kind of jump into the questions first. And then, anything else we missed we can talk about later. Would that work for you?
Sounds great, buddy. Just call the play.
All right. I'll call the play first. So this is from Brennan in Kansas. This is referring to, so as we mentioned, so Tim Drevno, the USC offensive line coach, was fired. He, if you recall, back in 2018 was the running backs coach, which didn't make a ton of sense. And then once Neil Callaway was fired towards the end of the season, I think there was four games left, Clay Helton moved Tim Drevno over there, and he was also like the run game coordinator. Also, Aaron Osmus, who was brought in a couple years back as well, his contract was not renewed. So they'll be on the lookout for a new offensive line coach and a new strength and conditioning coach. And make sure you check out USCFootball.com for all that. But Brennan in Kansas wrote in. He said, just saw the news about Drevno and Osmus out. I can't believe that somehow Clay Helton still survives. Absolutely embarrassing for this university to have a coach be able to have so much turnover, yet no responsibility and accountability on his actions. Why isn't this team winning in the trenches? We don't practice hard. Again, embarrassing and unbelievable. Do we not remember how bad the line was before Tim Drevno? We couldn't snap a dang ball. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, but when Helton got Aaron Osmus, didn't it take like months for him to even get him? That's someone he already worked with and knew, and the guy took months to make a deal. Question for the coach. How much turnover has Clay Helton had for every coaching position if you were assistant back in the day? Why the hell would you take a spot under someone who you know has such a high rate of firing people? Sorry for the long email. Just completely frustrated with this circus going on. Respectfully, Brennan in Kansas.
Well, normally it starts with the head coach, and the head coach is responsible for every aspect of the game, both on and off the field. When you talk about off the field, sometimes you get labeled for recruiting as wrong people or why your kid's getting in trouble and all of this, and that's a very difficult thing to be in charge of. But you and me, I evaluate the entire program, both. And when I look at the situation, they've been trying to glue this thing back together. What they do is they have a car that's running, and they get a flat, and they try to repair it. And then they need a new engine, and they put a new engine in it, but it's time to trade the car in. What I mean by that, it's time to decide who's and what who's running the program and how the program's going to be run. And I think that if you watch the playoff games, this basically gives you a description of what I'm talking about. If you watched, let's just start with Kirby Smart. When they won their game in the last seconds of the game with a field goal, he coached all three positions. The special teams, he told the special teams coordinator to get away. He ran that portion of it. The offensive coordinator, he told him to get away. He ran that portion of it himself. He took the defensive coordinator, and he ran the defense. He's coaching the team. He's part of coaching the team. And that's his philosophy, and that's the way he wins. And then again, you look at Nick Saban. He walks the sidelines like a tiger or a panther, and he listens to every call. He doesn't yell too much, but once in a while when he does yell, you certainly can hear him, and you know he's mad, and he allows his coordinators and everybody with their responsibility to take care of it. And if they can't get it done, he gets someone else. And if you can get it done, you'll get a head coaching job. Okay. And you look what Brian Kelly, he's in complete control of the game. He listens to everything that's going on. He stays calm. He keeps his team calm. He's not running up and down the sidelines trying to figure out what's going on, but he's in control of his team. So everyone has their personality and the way they run their team. And when I look at the team at USC, I don't know who's in charge or how it's being run. And it seems as though by just replacing a offensive line coach or strength coach, yes, certainly there are weaknesses in those areas, and we could talk about that if you want. But currently with the offense that's being run, doesn't make any difference who your offensive coach is, offensive line coach, because all he does is pass block. And again, they have not recruited. And if I was going to evaluate the offensive line coach as far as getting help too as an offensive line coach, you're not recruiting or getting the players that make the difference in the offensive line as far as a running game or passing game. You're not getting the 4 stars or the 5 stars. And if you watch the playoff games or the big bowl games, what were all the announcers and everybody talking about and evaluating? The trenches, the offensive line, the defensive line, and how they play against each other. Well, I think that's exactly what's wrong currently with the program, is no one's in charge as far as one philosophy of doing things the way that the head coach wants it done. And as far as we all know, I think we all know that knows football, and I talk to a lot of football coaches all over the country and in the Pac-12, as far as evaluating programs and players and so on, that when you look at one phase, you can't have one phase. You can't just have all running game. You can't just have all passing game. If you watch all those good teams play this past weekend, and I enjoyed every one of the games, they did it both. If they needed the run, they ran the football. When they passed the football. They played action pass, they have it all. They have a complete package. They go under center when they need to go out under center. They have packages. Well, that's lacking as far as in one phase of the football philosophy at USC. So no matter who your offensive line coach is, what's the difference except for talent? And you're not can't be a great offensive line coach unless you have schemes where you get your players a chance to be successful. And they got to be great players if you're planning on playing on the next level, which is the level of what we saw this past weekend. So it's a combination of everything. And when you look at the strength and conditioning coach, I've never been in and seen his workout. I don't know anything about him, but all I know, there was a lot of nagging injuries and injuries that I could not believe that took so long to get well, and sometimes guys were hurt, and I wondered how'd they get hurt. Torn pectoral muscle or something. Well, maybe something in the conditioning program isn't what it's supposed to be, or maybe it's not a happy place. And what I mean by that, I used to want my players to want to go to conditioning because that coach and his assistants sees my players more than my coaches and my assistants, because there's more of a off season than there is a regular season. So it's got to be an atmosphere in there where players see development and enjoy going in there and being a part of the team and seeing themselves all get better. So I don't know if that's happening. But it better be happening, because if you're not doing that, you're not going to get increase the ability of becoming a better football player and taking your skills from the weight room to the field. I don't want weightlifters. I want football players who are stronger and faster. And that's where it's developed.
That's an interesting point, Coach, because that it seemed like there was more, you know, focus on the weightlifting. But as far as the injuries go, that's been happening for a long time. Maybe that's about the culture as well, like you were talking about.
It is. There's been a lot of those. I mean, hamstrings, different things, you know, back injuries, groins. I mean, all these different types of things that I say, how did this happen? Well, it had to have happened in the off-season conditioning of some type. But that certainly didn't happen on the football field. Now, they've had a number of surgeries, which we all know, that takes a lot of rehabbing, which is a normal thing. But it's always taking so long to get them back, and then it's a continuance of the same injury. I mean, over and over and over, that a player really never does really recover. It seems to be that way, and I don't know where that's happening or why that's happening, because I'm not involved in the day-to-day operations actually being there.
Yeah, well, we'll see going forward what direction Clay Helton goes, bringing in a new offensive line coach and bringing in a new strength and conditioning coach. Let's talk about a little positive news. So over the weekend, USC did get a new signee. Well, it's a signee that happened in the early signing period, December. Corey Foreman, the number one player in the country, according to the 24/7 Sports composite rankings. Corona Centennial, you know him well. The buddy of Drake Jackson, and just an absolute stud on defensive end. And then also Sayer Wright, who's a cornerback from Loyola High School. He will sign in February. So a couple of big commitments there, bumping USC all the way up to number 8 in the national rankings. But John Abray had a question about it, and we'll get your thoughts on that too. He said, the title is Hope. He says, a little holiday hope for USC fans. Despite 6 years of irrelevance and mediocrity and not being able to develop players and wasting talent and enduring a head coach who will find any excuse not to play football and a head coach who has no idea how to prepare a team for big games, top recruits in California and across the country still put USC in their top 5. Can you imagine what a great coach could do with this program? What would be on your holiday wish list for USC football? Happy holidays and fight on, John in Brea.
Well, John and Brea, it's one of the elite football programs in the world, USC football. Right now, currently, the tradition of USC football in the horse, travelers recruiting the players. Because their parents remember what USC is all about, and the tradition and how it was and what it should be and all of the above. Kids come to USC because their parents loved USC and wish they could have gone to USC or played at USC, and now their kids have a chance of going to USC. And there's no reason to leave the state of California when you have great universities here in California. Corey Foreman's a great player, teammate of Drake Jackson, as you said. I met both of these kids in Vegas when they were up there a couple of years ago at a camp. And then they also take a tour, Corona Centennial, get in a bus during spring break and go to the different programs throughout the West Coast, every day being in a different program, watching spring practice, had a chance to meet them when they were at UNLV. Both good-looking kids, and at that time really wanted to be a Trojan. I couldn't say this before, but did. I wasn't a bit surprised that they both went to USC. But, you know, you got to take these type of programs or these kids when you get them and utilize them and put them into the right positions and get them to perform so more players want to come so that you play at a higher level. You don't want to opt out and not play any bowl game at all. You want to have a philosophy in your program when you're one of these great programs that these great players want to come so they get on the national scene. And then you get national exposure, and you get to play in these big games, the Fiesta Bowls and different bowl games where these great players want to play. And so I think that it's a great find and a great signee for USC, and I think that will open the door for other great players to take a look. But, of course, the bottom line is winning. The bottom line is going to the NFL. The bottom line is being happy and also developing. And I think that if you were to take Drake Jackson and put Corey Foreman on either side of the field across from each other and brought them up the field like you saw the defensive ends coming up the field in the college football playoffs and getting after people and then doing inside rushes, you got a hell of a defense because you can't get outside of them. You have mismatches with your defensive ends on tackles. You're not as quick. You can power rush and do different type of stunts and so on. You could be awesome on the defensive side of the football. You want them playing every single play in the game. You want them to be a part of every single play in the game, not half of the time they're running away from him or you're doing something else. So I think you should do that and take advantage of that. I think in the secondary, when you mentioned Wright, hey, they did a great job of recruiting. And I think, again, he became the – Williams was, what, number two recruiter in the country this year or something like that, or number four. So congratulations to him. And with that, he gets a new title, associate head coach, which means somebody's been tampering with him as far as offering him a job. So it gives him a pay raise and a new title. So all of that, you know, shows that great players want to be where other great players are and want to win and want to win big. And the potential is all there for USC. It's just putting the pieces together. You have a missing piece here or there. And, you know, it's got to all be put together with a philosophy that means that we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and I'm coaching this football team. And if you don't believe in going under center, well, it's time you start going under center or I'm going to get my ass fired because you're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. And that's the leadership you got to take as a head football coach. Know what it takes to win.
Yeah. Well, we have another question. You mentioned guys like Drake Jackson would be used. Well, first we had Bobby in L.A., way too long voicemail. Sorry, Bobby, but he's just still not excited because Clay Helton's the head coach, so he doesn't really care that USC gets these top recruits. Duly noted, Bobby. Try to keep him brief. But we also have this question about the use of Corey Foreman. Let me play it for you, Coach.
What's up, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. I have a question for Ryan and Coach Hyde. So Coach Hyde has obviously been critical of the way that Drake Jackson was used this year. Obviously, he thinks he should have his hand on the ground and be rushing from the edge that way and just playing that way. And, you know, now that USC just got Corey Foreman, I want to know, do you guys think that that will change the way that USC will be using Drake Jackson? And I just kind of want to know what you guys think and how you guys think that Todd Orlando will be using Drake Jackson and Corey Foreman together, because obviously they have a lot of success. I think there's a lot of ways you could make them effective. So thanks a lot. And then if you could also include Rajon Davis, because it's looking right now like Sandra pointing to him signing with USC as well. So thanks, guys.
Well, thank you. You hit it right on the head, man. I'd have those guys in on every play, and I'd have them terrifying the quarterback and the run game. I'd have them coached up where they come across the line of scrimmage. You play on their side of the line of ball, you just cause havoc. You're running in the blockers, guards pulling, you're doing the whole thing, rushing the passer. And you get them to the play at 110%. I tell you what, when you have big guys like that and have great quickness, you got the cream of the crop, man. I just tell my guys, hey, guys, just bring it all back to us in the inside and we'll take care of everything. I mean, play on their side of the football. Play on their side of the football. When you come up the field, of course, don't give the offset tackle hold because the linebackers or people have to fill there. But force it back in there, and we'll take care of the business, the bootlegs, the pass rush, the whole thing. So people know they're going to have to move their pocket, but they have to get outside of me too. So I think you could have the best pair of defensive ends in the country. I mean, I don't know everybody's potential out there. There's so many great players. But how can you have, when you have two number one guys like that, five stars playing on the outside with that size and that speed, and you don't utilize them to their ability? They're both going to go to the NFL if they play right, and why not play them where they're going to play in the NFL? Drake Jackson's not going to be a linebacker drop-off in the NFL. He's going to come across the line of scrimmage and cause havoc. So give the kid a chance and put him in there and let him be a great player. And, of course, this is me and my philosophy. Now, you might play him some other way. That's like taking a a defensive back and making him a nose guard. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me in my thought.
Yeah. Let's see. So if you guys listened to the Recruiting Blast podcast with Gerard Martinez, he kind of went into a little bit more detail of that. So that came out a couple of days ago. If you want to go back and check that out, Keely and Gerard talked about it. It will be interesting, Coach, I think, to see how those guys are used. Foreman's body type, and he actually at Corona Centennial, he was hurt half the year, but they did move him around. He played some middle linebacker. He seemed like he might be better suited for that role where he would drop back into coverage like a little bit more, where Drake Jackson, you might want to just be getting after the quarterback. But yeah, I think you want to have one guy on one side, one guy on the other. And for the most part, let him wreak havoc in the backfield.
Well, a lot of times in high school, you want your best player to be in the play. You don't want people running away from him. So you do a lot of different things with him. You don't want him to know where he's going to be. You know, you put him in the middle because he can go from sideline to sideline now. And, you know, I didn't see him play that much, so I don't know. But, you know, if I'm going to have a game plan, I'm obviously not going to run towards him. I'm going to double team him on pass rush and do everything else I can do. Now, if I put him in the middle or if I put him to the wide side of the field, the sideline at least is a defensive player for me. So I'm going to put him and move him around where I'm my best player, where he can make the biggest plays. And again, that's why you do that sometimes. You know, in high school, you know, you put your best player where he can make more the most plays. So his college position and his future is a down lineman going after the quarterback and making all that extra money and being a great football player. Because today there's so much passing and different things that are going on, and you have to run so well to cover passes and do different things in the NFL. You've got to cover some of these backs and little receivers that are so quick. They're maybe 5'10", but they're so quick that a big guy can't really cover him man-on-man and do some of these things. It's just impossible to do. So I always just say, big on big. And let's see who gets it done, man. Find out who's a hammer and who's a nail and get after people. So that's why I mentioned the high school, as far as where they play all these guys, a lot of times it really doesn't say where you should play in college, because you usually want to have your greatest players on the field in a position where they can make most of the plays. But when you're in college, you want both of your players. You hope you have the possibility of having two guys like Jackson and Foreman on the field at the same time, doing the same thing.
Yeah. Let's go to a question. This is from Elizabeth. Coach, thank you guys. Really love your show. Been around USC football for over 55 years. These last five have been difficult. This last year was just horrible to watch. My question is, do you think that the athletic director and the president will stick their neck out and actually support Clay? I mean, by actually giving him a vote of confidence. If they already did and I missed it, maybe you can just let us know. Like I said before, keep up the great work. Also tell Coach High, I met him one time. That man is a Holt, Saban, John Wooden type of coach and very well respected in the football world. Thanks, Elizabeth. I don't think there was any sort of vote of confidence from anyone at USC that we've heard of. But just, if you remember, Texas gave Tom Herman a vote of confidence like a month or two ago and ends up firing him and hiring Steve Sarkisian. But no vote of confidence that I heard of, Elizabeth. But what are your thoughts on it, Coach?
Well, you know, it depends what you're looking at. Are you looking for Texas where $20 million and a $10 million buyout for the assistant coaches doesn't mean anything to them, because football is so big to them. Now, you don't hear that type of talk really at USC. You don't hear much from the president currently right now. I don't think Mike Bone makes much of a commitment as far as saying or making any type of statement, because I'm sure he doesn't have the support to make the decision that he needs to make, and if he wants to make it or whatever's necessary. And I think it's difficult for them because they don't know what they don't know. I mean, you know, when you're a college president, the most dangerous person is a person that thinks they know and they don't know. Man, you're in trouble. And I think that you have to rely on people that do know exactly what's going on. And I'll just make it a simple type of thing. How many people in the administration now currently at USC go back to the old years, remember where Julie's was, or McKeever's Bells, or some of the things where the rich tradition of USC football was. When you could have a drink before you went into the Coliseum, and then you could have a beer when you're in the Coliseum. Those days are gone. And when Dennis Packard was the voice on the PA system for so many years, he's gone. With so many of the things that were there before, like the Alumni Club, San Gabriel, San Fernando Valley, all these different clubs, they're gone. Why are they gone? They've worked for so many years. Sure, there's reasons as far as not drinking in the stadium, and I understand that, and that's not one of my complaints. But it was a party. People used to get ready for a football game on Thursday, Friday. It was a big, big event. Now, are they making it a big, big event now? Isn't it as important as it used to be? I don't see that coming out of the administration. I don't see that the endorsements and the things that are necessary to get people fired up to think there's a future with USC football. No one makes those type of statements. They just all of a sudden release something that's going on with they're going to make some changes in the coaching staff. That's fine. But how often do you keep doing that? I think that you need to make a statement and say this guy can do it or he can't do it. And stand behind that. 7 wins wasn't enough at Texas. They want 10 wins. They want 12 wins. They want to be in the playoffs, college football playoffs. Yeah, USC mentions that. They mention it. Oh, yeah, the college football playoffs. But do they really know what it takes to get there? Well, who cares? Who's making that type of emphasis to make sure that happens? That's what you have, that drive and that leadership from somewhere where people believe. And all of a sudden on campus, when the college president says, football is important here. Well, the director of admissions hears that. All the vice presidents hear that. All the faculty hear that. All the alumni hear that. And all of a sudden, it's important at USC. And by golly, we better get it done or I'm going to make some changes around here. So you've got to hear that type of statement and that type of support to get the ear of the people, the players, the coaches, and give the support to the people who know. When you look around USC, the AD's not from USC. Development guy's not from USC. The chief administrator in the athletic department is not from USC. How do they really know how the Trojans feel about football and the days of Pete Carroll, John McKay, John Robinson, and the glory years?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's a great question, Coach. And the talk, you talked about the buyout in Texas and all of that. We have a question from Curtis on a voicemail. I'll play for you, and we'll get into talking about that a little bit more.
Curtis from Moreno Valley. Just heard that Texas fired their whole coaching staff, and it's going to cost about $40 million to buy out everybody and bring in a new staff. Their alumni and boosters are supposed to be kicking in big time. What happened to USC boosters and alumni? All you guys could afford was the crop duster at the Notre Dame game to embarrass the kids or influence the cheerleaders to cheer to fire Clay Helton. No, this is going to take money. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
And real quick, Coach. Curtis, I don't think the alumni were influencing the cheerleaders. That was that's something on their own. And the quote-unquote crop duster was a grassroots, you know, movement from fans. And these aren't the kind of fans that can write $20 million checks. That's what you need for something like this. You need to be able to write $20, $25 million, just throw it away, flush it down the toilet, and get rid of your coach. And there's definitely people at Texas willing to do that. The other issue is, you want to do something like that. Even if someone wrote a check, would Mike Bone be able to just say, okay, we're going to move on? Do you have the support from the president of the university, from the board of trustees? Do you want to have that look? There's a certain look that Texas has now after furloughing staff, after cutting salaries and all that stuff, to flush that kind of money down the toilet to get rid of your head coach and bring in a very questionable hire in Steve Sarkisian, who USC fans are well familiar with. I don't think, even if you had all the money in the backing, that you would have presidential and board of trustees support to do something like that, the kind of optics it would bring during a pandemic with all the other problems going on in the university right now. There's a ton of problems going on in the university. I'm, you know, I agree. Like, if you could make this move, you should have made the move. And USC decided not to do that. But I think there's the political aspects of it that aren't, you don't have the same kind of support from the president, for sure. There's all the issues that USC has with all the scandals and the lawsuits and all that kind of stuff. And Texas makes a ton of money. That's the highest grossing revenue athletic department in the country. It's more than USC. So there's a lot of reasons why. Should USC have moved on? Yes, I 100% agree that. But there's reasons why it hasn't. And a lot of it has to do with the kind of people that USC brought in and what Coach was mentioned before. It doesn't seem to be as important. Football doesn't seem to be as important as it was in some of those other eras.
Yeah, you're right, Ryan. I tell you what, though. It would sure fix a lot of things in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
It would sure get a lot of people back in the program in a hurry. There certainly would be a lot of excitement again, even with this pandemic that's going on and everything. People would be positive. And I'm not saying that I don't like Clay Helton. I'm just saying whatever the move's going to be, if you're going to make a move, you make the move. Otherwise, you come out with a statement like you just mentioned a moment ago. We're keeping him, and that's the way it is, and it shuts everybody up, and you either like it or you don't like it. But saying nothing doesn't do you any good at all. So they've got to decide, as you said, and I've been talking about, that they got to decide what type of program they want. If the boosters and the big hitters want to make a change, they should make a change. Because don't feel sorry for Coach Clay Helton, because he's going to have a lot of money and be a rich man, okay? And when you're a football coach and you're making $5 million a year or whatever, you expect certain things. You know certain things are going to happen. You know what's expected of you. And you get that in your contract, and you know exactly what your contract is all about. And if it isn't happening and you aren't happy or they're not happy, then that's the way it is in the business. Just like Tom Herman, that's the way it is in the business. So, you know, you look at three coaches that were at SC, and I want to congratulate all of them, from Lane Kiffin to Steve Sarkisian to Ed Orgeron. They were all at USC. They all three got fired by the same AD. And now look where they are coaching. Ed Orgeron won a national championship. Steve Sarkisian is now at Texas as far as one of the top premier programs. And Lane Kiffin wins a bowl game. Yeah. So congratulations, all three of those guys, as far as being able to overcome disappointment, being fired, and now moving on. And congratulations to them. So, you know, there is hope if someone wants to take the lead. And some of the big hitters right now aren't sure that they want to give that type of money because they're not sure what the philosophy is. There's no philosophy. If someone was to get everybody together, the college president said, hey, we're going to make a change here. I want to come up with, we're going to need $40 million, whatever it is, or do we have people that want to make a change? Otherwise, shut up. Don't complain about our football program. Hey, you'd see some people move if it was going to be that way. And an Urban Meyer was coming in. You'd see a lot of excitement, okay? But right now, doing nothing, there is no excitement. It's like you like watching paint dry.
Yeah. It's you need that excitement. You need people to be excited about the program, and they're not excited with Clay Helton running the show. And I think that's the athletic department's job, is they're trying to make it as exciting as possible, but they're doing that with the caveat, but Clay Helton will still be the head coach, and that's where a lot of fans have an issue. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come right back answering more questions.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up.
new criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
This one, let's see, we got a question. Ideas for saving college football. Hello, Paracel Podcast. Happy New Year. With a new year upon us and no big changes in the USC football program other than Graham Harrell taking out his anger for the failings of his offense on Tim Drevno, I'd like to pose a philosophical debate question for you. What two or three changes would you make to college football in order to save it from being led by the SEC and controlled by ESPN? Here's mine. Rescind the freshman eligibility rule. Give players a year to acclimate to college academics and enjoy college life without the pressure of earning playing time. Allow schools to provide scholarship players of any sport with a weekly stipend based on the existing work-study financial aid model. It'd be the federal minimum wage salary rate for a maximum of 20 hours per week for time players spend in practice with coaches. That's $145 a week. Equal sharing of the 130 FBS schools of the TV contract money from college football playoff games. The school making the playoffs each get an extra share, and the two teams making the championship get an additional share. Your thoughts and suggestions? Fight on, John in Oakland. P.S. Any college football revenue sharing has to be simple to avoid the classic scene. I believe that Buddy Hackett is channeling SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, while Jonathan Winters is Larry Scott.
Well, I tell you, that is not going to happen, because if you remember years ago, I don't know how many you can remember how many years. Ryan, you probably don't remember this. Freshmen were ineligible. When freshmen came on campus, they weren't eligible to play. They did have that type of requirement. Then they formed freshman teams, and there used to be a freshman team, and that freshman team used to scrimmage against the varsity and sometimes play other teams or junior colleges or whatever to get experience and not be a part of the varsity. And then this came into the pro world, came around where playing at college became you want to get out of college as soon as you can so you could be in the NFL and this and that. So the redshirting rule used to be so popular that you used to come in and a coach, when he redshirted you, you felt real good about it. You had an opportunity to work on your degree another year. It almost guaranteed you graduation. You got bigger, stronger, faster. But then a lot of players don't like to redshirt now, especially the great players, because they want to, that wastes the year. They want to be able to get into the NFL. So it's changing times now. And it used to be about education. It used to be about college experiences. It used to be about tradition and spending your 4 years in the fraternities and memories and so on. Now it's more or less changes how quick can I get out of here so I get to the NFL if I'm a great player, or if I'm not getting my playing time, I better transfer and go to another school or that. So it's a whole different philosophy now in college football. But you don't see a lot of teams that are successful having a lot of transfers. There are transfers that are going on. You don't see a lot of players opting out when you're playing for a big bowl game or the college football playoffs. You don't see players opting out when there's a playoff game. There's not one player opt out as far as playing, because they're playing for something that rewards them. So right now, currently, just going to an ordinary bowl game is not something that a lot of players want to do anymore. And I think that's sad because of the memories and the rings you wear and all of the above. I think it's really, really sad. And I think opting out, because you might not want to play a team that might beat you and you have a bad off season, I think that's bad. I think that's part of life, learning victory and learning defeat and challenging and learning to get back up and so on. So times have changed. And the NCAA has never wanted to pay players, and I've never been in favor of that. I mean, I've always been in favor. If you got a scholarship to go to college, look what you've gotten. 4 years of all of your tuition, meals, academics, travel, everything paid for. I mean, you've saved your parents thousands of dollars. So you're really are getting paid, and you don't have to pay any income tax on it or anything. It's the best 4 years of your life going to college. It was for me. I mean, after that, it's all work. So, you know, I think it's gotten away from all of that now. And I can see why some players want to opt out. Some players do want to change. And, you know, I'll give you an indication of something that a couple of players that are probably really disappointed. And they're the running backs at USC. You know, Carr sits back and watches Harris play in the championship game. And, hey, Carr was one of the top running backs in the country. He was like third in the country, and Harris was one. Harris goes to Alabama, Carr goes to USC, and look at the difference as far as where they both are today. And Steps, he could have gone to Notre Dame. It came down to Notre Dame and USC. If he'd have been at Notre Dame, he'd have gone undefeated and played in a playoff game. But both of those backs became pass blockers. So, you know, you have to look at the things that really correct your program. And make the changes that are necessary so you can be there and play in these type of programs. It's not the little things. It's the overall picture that makes a difference. So that's my feeling on that. And, you know, I've never been for paying players. I think they get paid by a scholarship and the way times have changed.
Yeah. John, just real quick on the 3 points, I don't think any of them will work. Certainly don't like the freshman eligibility rule. You're going the wrong direction there. $145 a week isn't going to change anything. And there's no way they're sharing that kind of TV contract money. I mean, I think if you expand the playoffs, that will help, you know, make it less regional. But you have a problem. I mean, if you're a fan of Colin Cowherd, you know, I've known him well for a while. He used to talk college football all the time on a show. He doesn't anymore because it's become too regional. And I think that's a real problem. It is more of a regional thing, and that's got to change. And also, I'm not sure about Buddy Hackett and Jonathan Winters, but if you're going to make a reference to a classic scene, I think that's a movie from the 60s or something, you probably should say at least what the movie is, because I think a lot of our audience is not going to know. Did you know what he was referring to, Coach?
No, I didn't understand that. That's why I didn't answer it.
It might be Mad, Mad World, but it's like if that's the case, it's like a 1963 movie that I've never seen. I don't know, but whatever. But thanks, John, for the email. Let's see. We have Peristyle. Could you ask Coach Hyde if he thinks USC is the college equivalent of the Dallas Cowboys or Raiders, perhaps? I'd like his thoughts. What can SC fans learn from the Cowboys and Raiders' struggles, mistakes over the years? Thanks.
No, I don't think that they are. I think that the Dallas Cowboys is owned by one person who's the owner, the general manager, the president, the whole thing, and really is involved in the Dallas Cowboys. And he's a guy that needs to put it under somebody else's leadership, sit back and watch on the sidelines, because he can't fire himself when they don't win. So he needs to, you know, when he had Jimmy Johnson there, who I got to know pretty good, coach one all-star game with him. You know, sometimes you think, you know, I told you earlier that I use that term, the most dangerous person is the person that thinks they know and don't know. Now, he played football, and he's got a great empire there. But wouldn't it be easier on him if you watch somebody else do all the things that he's doing and let him run his oil business and everything else and walk on the sideline like the guy from the Atlanta Falcons who owns Home Depot and all of these guys and run in a different crowd, and they both talk about, you know, but to be in the limelight, he likes to be on TV, he likes to be interviewed, he likes to be in the draft room, that's his gig. And that's his, it's all on him. When they don't win, it's all on him, okay? Well, at USC, it's basically all on the president and the regents and trustees, because they're sitting where Jerry Jones is sitting. And they got to want to get it done. And they give your coach and your athletic department all the things that are necessary, and you get it done or you get someone else. Because they're both the same type of programs, Dallas Cowboys, USC. I mean, they are. They're both well-known and big name programs and all of the above, and it's very disappointing when they both don't perform to where they should perform. And I think that's why most of the people call in here, because they expect more. We wouldn't get a lot of calls here or a lot of emails and stuff if they were 11-0. Everybody would be happy. They'd be drinking their Bloody Mary still and doing all the things at the country club today and playing golf and doing all the things, and the students would be fired up and all of the above. I don't think people really understand the magnitude of a winning football program and what it does to unify a university. The students, the alumni, the donations, the whole thing. It's the first thing of the school when the kids come back. The homecoming, Parents Day, Salute to Troy. I mean, all these huge things that kick off the school year and everything. And, you know, it's just part of a prideful thing, and I hate to see that go away.
Yeah.
And unless you hurry up, it's going to go away.
Yeah. Terrence in High Point, North Carolina, class of 94, like along the same lines of everything we talked about the buy-in from the presidents and the athletic directors. We talked about that a little bit. Dan in Pasadena, kind of along the same lines. So he says, the problem with Jordan football is that the senior people at USC have changed their priorities of the program. The rest of us pretend it's the same place we knew before. I know this based on a letter I received from athletic director Mike Bone. The letter was written to me to thank me and my wife for our contributions to USC athletics. He said it would help them achieve their, quote, vision of becoming the best scholar-athlete experience in America. And then after a couple of nonsense comments came another surprise. They intended to, quote, compete for championships. Doesn't every team compete? No mention of fight on and win. He has been harnessed by the president, who has no clue. As further evidence by this act of buying her a house that doesn't work for a university president in Santa Monica for $8.6 million, while a very appropriate house that was donated and is now worth $25 million sits unused and could have been a major source for getting a real coach. Until the senior people provide some real leadership, Mike Bone will not need to write more letters to me. As a loyal alum who has contributed to the school as the Coliseum renovation and bought season tickets since graduating over 50 years ago, I am done. Dan in Pasadena. Whoa.
Well, Dan, you know, you're not the only one that feels like that. There's a lot of people that I know that the boosters are done because of ask, but don't give, as far as the receding. You know all the things that's gone through at the Coliseum, the receding, taking away seats, charging more, raising the prices, all of this, but not giving them the product that they really want. That doesn't really work. I mean, when you think about it, how does that work? And you know, when you look at the top levels of trustees and all of them up there, you know, it's like anything else. You know, they all want to like each other, and when they go to a board meeting, they all want to sit there and like each other and don't get in arguments and so on and so on. And difficult to, you know, make those type of decisions that are necessary for the university. But they all know wherever they go, people are yelling at them like they are politicians, telling them about what their thoughts are. But they're afraid to go in there and make a strong stand and say, hey, Ms. Soltuk, you know, this is what we want out of you. And if you can't do this and you have a different vision of our university, we'll buy you out, too.
Yeah.
And they got to make that type of understanding with people of where we are and what we're accomplished. We just put $300 million in the Coliseum for what? A study hall? What are you going to have, a study hall in there? I mean, what are you going to put in that stadium? I mean, people aren't going to come to that stadium. They're paying $5 million for a box. They're not paying $5 million for a box to come in there or paying a Cardinal Gold and these revenues. They're not coming there to look at you lose or not have the pride and the band and all the thing, travel or run around. That's part of it. Well, unless they make these type of decisions and strong decisions, it ain't going to happen because everybody's afraid of themselves. So, you know, those guys have got to be, they're put there for leadership, Ryan, and they got to get that done and pass that down. Otherwise, clean house and start over.
Yeah. We got a couple more for you, Coach. This is from Jeff. It's his high school girlfriend analogy. He says, Ryan, I know you love the food analogies, but this analogy on how USC football makes me feel, he said, sorry, it's long. I've been in love with the girl since, like, grade school. She's the hottest girl in school. She took me to the Rose Bowl when we first started dating, and I fell head over heels in love with her. I even gave her a promise ring. She loves taking weekend trips to visit Clay, who is a college guy. but they are, quote, just friends, and she wants to visit the college. She takes money from my wallet and borrows my car, and I don't hear from her for days at a time, but she always comes back and apologizes. My friends don't like what she does to me, and my parents hate her. This year, we went to a party at ASU, and she spends the whole night flirting and dancing with other guys, but you know what? At the end of the night, she came home with me. She did the same when we went to a UCLA party this year, but again, she came home with me. Well, a few weeks ago, we went to an Oregon party, and after flirting and dancing with a guy all night, I expect her to leave with me, and surprise, she didn't and disappeared on me. She texted me and said she was going to spend some time in Eugene visiting her, quote, friend Mario, and she was going to cancel our Christmas plans and New Year's Eve plans. Naturally, I'm brokenhearted and don't want anything ever to do with her ever again. I'm moving on. Then today she shows up at my doorstep with a top recruit in the country and apologizes and tells me how much she loves me. So naturally, I give her my credit card and my car because she needs to go shopping at the mall and all is forgiven. This is my life being a USC football fan. I want to hate them so bad, and I actually do hate them most of the time. That's from Jeff. What do you think, Coach? It's kind of funny.
Jeff, you're my man. I tell you what, at least you will call in and you're honest about what's going on in your life. I'll tell you what. I don't know what to tell you on that one, buddy. I've never been faced with that in my coaching situation or with my wife, or when my wife was my girlfriend. Normally that didn't happen in my home, okay? And I think you have to find someone who's more or less committed to your program, okay?
So you're telling them to stop being a USC fan, Coach? Come on.
I don't know how to counsel you on that one, buddy. I would just say good luck.
Yeah. It is funny because, you know, it is like this flirting thing where I like the analogy when you're saying, hey, I'm flirting with, Herm Edwards over at Arizona State. It looks like she's left you for Herm, and then she comes back. I felt like USC was flirting with losses there the whole season, and then you just sort of believe that, oh, they'll just come back and win at the end, and that didn't happen against Oregon. But, good one there, Jeff. Well, thanks for sending that one in, a little levity towards the end of the show. We got one more, Ryan in Orange County. If Clay Helton and his staff had been the coach of the 2003 to 2005 era teams, how do you think those teams would have fared? How many games do you think they would have won? Although Helton and crew would not have been able to recruit that level of talent, of course. Ryan in the OC. What do you think about that, Coach?
I don't think they'd have known how to handle it, okay? I think it'd have been bigger than what they are. They would not have understood, first of all, how to recruit that type of talent to fit into the tradition and what the offense and defense philosophy was, and the white flag and the people afraid to come into the Coliseum. And they used to, when I walk out the tunnel or the coach would walk out, he'd say, Coach, just let up on us. I swear, just let the clock run. I mean, that used to be a punishing. It wasn't like a victory that the Trojans wanted. They wanted to hurt you. They wanted you to remember when you went home and you flew all the way home that, man, I don't want to go back there again. So, I mean, I don't think that's what their thoughts are. I don't think that's how they act or talk. I think that the offensive side of it is not. I think the defensive side has the spirit of it, as far as when I hear that one day we were at spring practice, yell and scream and do this and that. I don't know if they don't have the players that they had then. And I don't know if they used to run basic defense at USC, basic 50 defense. And they didn't do much studying or do anything else. They just string. Bring yours, and I'll bring mine, and we'll see who's – I'll put my big man on your big man, and we'll see what happens. Yeah. And today it's more of what do you want to call it? Practice against air, so you're always right. It's a different philosophy and a different type of program that people aren't used to at USC. Now, not that Clay Helton can't do that, but he's got to have people surrounding him that believe in that. And right now he doesn't have that on one side of the football. I'm not sure on the other side because I haven't seen enough.
Yeah, I mean, to me, college football is about having the right leadership. And Pete Carroll was the perfect leader at the time. And that's why USC was successful. Like, why wasn't USC good with Paul Hackett? If you just insert a failed head coach into that same time frame. It wasn't because something magical was in the air in Los Angeles in 2004. It was because Pete Carroll led it. So if it wasn't a coach as good or better than Pete Carroll, then you wouldn't have the same kind of result. So yeah, would this staff have a ton of success in those years? Even if you gave them USC's players then, no. We've seen this staff not be able to do things with some great players. And, you know, that I feel like you have to have the great leadership. You have to have the great coaching. And that's what Pete Carroll brought. You don't have it right now. That's the big problem. So putting a coach from this era into that era, if USC had a great head coach right now who was winning or, you know, going to the playoffs and stuff, and you said, oh, you put him in 2004, yeah, they probably had a lot of success then too. It wasn't about the time. It was more about the leader, and you had a better leader then than what you do now.
Yeah, and just to say something positive about Clay Helton, you know, he's in a position where he's damned if he does and he's damned if he don't. You know, he has to hear all of this type of stuff all the time and people up and down about him and so on. You know, he's got to be able to have the knowledge and talk to somebody and sit down and that he respects and say, possibly, you know, sometimes what am I doing wrong or what do I need to do to correct some of the things as a person out there that watches our program, how would you evaluate our program? And not sit back and listen to other people tell him that really don't know, or people on his staff or individuals. I mean, he needs to really find out a way to save his program and save his job.
Yeah.
And unless he's willing to do these type of things, it's going to be like this forever. For him, until the university makes a statement one way or another what they want to do.
Yeah. All right, Coach. Well, great stuff. A lot of questions we had to get to today, but thanks for getting through them. And we'll get on a more regular schedule here going forward. But keep sending those questions in. We love them, and we appreciate them. And we will, we'll talk to you again soon, Coach.
Okay, buddy, and thank you very much, and Happy New Year to everyone out there.
Happy New Year, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Make sure you go check out uscfootball.com for tons of info on the Trojans 24 hours a day. But that's the Coach. I'm Ryan. Thanks for tuning in. And we will talk to you next time.
The Rose Bowl Legacy Foundation preserves, protects, and enhances the future of the Rose Bowl Stadium as a National Historic Landmark. America's Stadium has hosted two Olympic Games, with a third one coming in 2028, two World Cup Finals, five Super Bowls, and the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl, since 1923. It is the epic center of college football and is the most iconic stadium in the world. To learn more about how you can support the Rose Bowl Stadium as it turns 100 years young, visit www.inspire, which spells inspire, 2022.org.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
On May 23rd...
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not going to survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.